In the end, God tells Job's three friends that they need to repent. But he doesn't say a thing about Elihu. Does that mean that Elihu had it right where the other friends got it wrong? Is his voice softer than the other three? Welcome to The Good Word. I'm Alden Thompson, your host and study guide author, and we continue our series on the Book of Job, and my conversation partners are again Dave Thomas, Dean of the Walla Walla University School of Theology, and Jen Ogden, Associate Pastor of the Walla Walla University Church. So we have a whole lesson, a good solid 13 minutes to talk about Elihu. So we almost got into a quarrel at the beginning here just before we started, Jen. You said you liked Elihu, so tell me why.
I do. He's not like the other three. He's not like the other three friends of Job. And in that, he comes to it from a little different perspective. A, he's younger. He comes to it from a little bit of a humble space, saying, you know, I don't know everything, but it looks like you're defending yourself rather than defending God. And I'm not sure I understand it all, but maybe we should start defending God because he understands a bigger picture than we do. So I guess I have a little more sympathetic heart for him.
Dave?
Well, I don't know. You catch me on the fly here because I have never paid much attention to Elihu. And I realize
you're in good company. God didn't pay any attention
to
him either.
But I realize it's precisely because of what Jen said, is that, you know, I've never really thought this through, but it's because he's not in the forefront of trying to fix Job.
He doesn't defend Job.
No.
He says that Elihu's wrath was roused because Job justified himself rather than justifying God, which is the first person who doesn't say, Job, you were wrong, curse God and die, or you're a complete noodle head. You know, none of that. Yeah, none of the fix yourself kind of ideology that his other friends brought to bear in the situation.
So thank you for putting me in the same category thought-wise as God. He paid no attention to Elihu, and that was nice of you.
Well, what I've done here, I'll admit, and it says I'm biased because I read a recent book by Sigfrid Tonstad, Traditions of Sense and Nonsense, in which he says that Elihu is one of the spokespersons for saying, you can't understand that, so shut up.
Fair.
Now, you may not have picked up those passages, but anyway, as I say, I approach this with a bit of a negative bias. And it's always a challenge whenever you read any part of Job, whether it's the friends or Job, because there's this constant cross current going back and forth. But what I did, maybe we can use this at least, when we go through, let me read that quotation you referred to here, and then I will get some feedback. Because these are the kinds of things that would make me angry about Elihu if I were in Job's situation. Okay?
Okay.
So we'll think of it that way. But Elihu became very angry with Job for justifying himself rather than God. But was Job really presenting an either-or option? He, you know, if he would come out and God would talk to him, everything would be fine. Now, was that self-justification?
I think Job speaks of himself, but he very rarely says, there must be a reason this is happening. God must have a reason. Right? That's the whole thing. The whole dialogue really is, this is happening for no reason. God, come and explain.
And if we take the more edgy reading that you favored last time about he will kill me and I have no hope, but I will still defend myself.
Yeah, it's very much about self-defense then,
Okay, now he also quotes, Elihu quotes Job as saying, I am pure, I've done no wrong. I am clean and free from sin. Yet God has found fault with me. He considers me his enemy. Now Job experiences him as his enemy, but I'm not sure that God has found fault with him, or has he?
Well, I don't think so when you take the beginning of the book into consideration. God speaks very favorably and highly of Job and holds him up as an example of a righteous man.
Unfortunately, he doesn't do that to Job. He says it to someone else. So Job doesn't have that perspective. You know, we have this brilliant 2020 hindsight perspective, but Job didn't have that.
No.
I think it'd be more accurate for Elihu to say that Job complains about God's silence. Not that God has found fault with him.
I would probably agree with that. And you know, I don't know, I sometimes think that silence is more difficult to deal with than an accusation. Because when somebody is silent, we have nothing to deal with. You are left with your own thoughts.
And that was what God did. He was silent.
So, yeah.
And so Job was in turmoil. Now, some scholars have said that Elihu, from a standpoint of the book of Job as a literary construct, and it is a literary construct, that what happens is that Elihu is a bit softer than the other three, that's what they say. And so it's just inserted there kind of as a cushion before you get to the speech from the whirlwind.
Mm.
See, that speech from the whirlwind is pretty straightforward. Now, I can't really deal with that one, but this is another quotation, 33:12. In this you are not right, for God is greater than any mortal. Now, this is Elihu. It says, for God is greater than any mortal. I think Job would agree with Elihu that God is greater than any mortal, but he would be outraged to hear Elihu go on and say that God responds to some, but not others. And that's what he does there in 33:12,
mm-hmm.
after that. Oh, he does some this way, some that way, some that. Well, then why doesn't he do that to me? See, that's what I hear. Now, there's another one, an indictment of Job, 34:5-9. I'm hoping that you can provide a good solid defense for Elihu. Maybe you can, but in any event, this is his indictment of Job. If I were Job listening to this, I would be angry. Job says, I am innocent, but God denies me justice. Although I am right, I am considered a liar. Although I am guiltless, his arrow inflicts an incurable wound. Is there anyone like Job who drinks scorn like water? He keeps company with evildoers. He associates with the wicked, for he says there is no profit in trying to please God. I don't think Job was saying that.
No, I agree. I don't think he is. I think I'm not saying that Elihu is the perfect respondent. I'm just saying that I think that of all the responses, his is probably the most equitable and the most willing to try and be understanding. And I think he does hear what Job is saying, and he interprets it through his own lens.
Yeah.
One that is perhaps not as mature. You know, he confesses that he's younger and he doesn't understand everything. But I think also, you know, he is seeing things from a very one-sided perspective. But I think he's arguing for God's perspective in this dialogue. And he's claiming some justice for God. And I think he's, in his own way, perhaps naively, working to defend God.
So when you read that, there was a tangential thought that came to my mind quite possibly about he's accused of keeping company with evildoers.
Yep.
That sounds familiar.
And you know, he associates with the wicked. You know, and then I think of the friends of Jesus. Jesus faced the same accusation, but that's not really what we're talking about. It just was a tangential thought that...
Well, here's an echo that Elihu still struggles with, that Job is in trouble, therefore he is wicked. See, that's... He's still dealing with that. If you look at...
So is this an accusation or a reflection of what he thinks is a reality? That
Well, he's still trying to paste the bad guy label on Job.
Mm-hmm.
Here's in chapter 35, for example, here are selected verses. Yet you ask him, what profit is it to me, and what do I gain by not sinning? If you sin, how does that affect him? If your sins are many, what does that do to him? If you are righteous, what do you give to him? Or what does he receive from your hand? Your wickedness only affects humans like yourself, and your righteousness only other people. He does not answer when people cry out because of the arrogance of the wicked. So Job opens his mouth with empty talk, and without knowledge he multiplies words.
Mm-hmm.
Now there's another topic which we may come back to in another setting where he says, what benefit is it, what difference does it make to you? Now I think that what Job does, what each one of us does have a larger vision, but Elihu's arguing, yeah, it doesn't make a difference to God what you say or do.
So what do you think Elihu is trying to do here? He's trying to justify God and not Job?
Yeah, I think that's clearly, and God needs some justification. I think that he could use a good PR man, given the way he has dealt with Job.
Hmm.
Now, there's one other aspect, and I think we can tuck it in here in this discussion. When it comes to the life that Job lived, there is the question of Job's statement of his ethics on chapter 31, which one of my professors, Old Testament, George G.W. Anderson, said it is the finest statement of ethics that we have anywhere in the Old Testament. And it's in chapter 31. It comes before Elihu's speech, and I don't know what Elihu thinks about this, but if it is true, and I think we would have to take Job's word as true, it's really quite a remarkable testimony. He vows that he would not look lustfully at a young woman. He's not walked with falsehood or hurried after deceit. He's not allowed himself to be enticed by a woman or have lurked at his neighbor's door. He has not denied justice to any of his servants. He's met the needs of the poor, the widow, the fatherless. He's not used his influence in court to testify against the fatherless. He's not relied on wealth or gold. He's not allowed himself to be enticed by the worship of sun or moon. He's not rejoiced at his enemy's misfortune or pronounced a curse against him. He's never let the members of his household go hungry. He has not allowed the stranger or traveler to remain in the street. He's never concealed his sins for fear of the contempt of the people. He's been a faithful steward of his land and supported his tenants.
Mm.
I mean, that is a fabulous statement, far above and beyond the normal practice of saints in the Old Testament. Should we take him at his word?
I don't think there's anything to contraindicate that what he said is true. Even God says that he's a good and righteous man.
Yeah.
You know, he's blameless.
And before this, he has this rather painful chapter of his before and after experience. Before, people treated me with respect. It was, you know, really good because where I walked, and now that things have turned, these same people simply make fun of me. They won't pay any attention to me. See? And so as part of that sequence here, you then come to Job 31, the chapter that we just referred to, and it really makes quite quite an impressive statement.
Mm-hmm.
So the wrath of Elihu, if we try to summarize that, Jen, you probably softened my unhappiness with Elihu a little bit. It is a very strange insertion there because Job doesn't respond to him. God doesn't say anything about him. It's just there. And maybe what the scholars say that it's kind of a cushion, a somewhat more gentle version to as a cushion before we get to the whirlwind, which in fact is our theme for next week. And our time is up, so I want to thank both of you for helping out. And I want to thank Jared Miller, our program engineer, and to all of you for listening in for The Good Word. I'm Alden Thompson.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.